The Carmichael Dave Show.
He's on the microphone when he's not on the microphone. He's playing a song, and when he's not playing a song, he's on the microphone, and then boom!
With Jason Ross.
No, he didn't! Yes, he did!
Call or text at 916-339-1140.
It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross on Sacktown Sports.
We begin the second hour of the show. Jason Ross, Christopher Laud, Carmichael Dave out today. Should be back with us tomorrow. We're going to get into the Eastern Conference with the Celtics dismantling of the Cavaliers last night, game one. All these games, for the most part, have been seen on TNT. It's kind of night appointment television for many of you out there, myself included. And I know we touched on this, Dave and I, yesterday or the day before. But as these basketball contract negotiations go on, and I don't know how you guys all feel about that kind of stuff. I know we talked in the first hour a little bit about disconnect with money and athletes and sports figures and team valuations and all that kind of stuff. I feel like you can lump the same thing in, Chris, with television rights, because in the end, as long as I have the ability to watch the games on whatever platform I'm going to find them, but I'm so comfortable with TNT, and I think that show has become so iconic with Ernie and Shaq and Kenny and Charles that if it truly does play out where some of the speculation is that TNT loses, I think their big boss has even said, yeah, we don't need the NBA. I think you do. And But I can't tell if that's me saying I think you do because that's what I know and that's what it's been and that's what's grown, or basketball will still be fine if it's on NBC or some other, you know, other platform, Amazon or something. But it may not be Shaq, Ernie, Chuck, and Kenny again. And that to me is, not only will I miss it, but I think that's bad for the game. And do you care, like, wherever you get your main things that you watch, whether if it's soccer, if that changed platforms, would that be a big deal for you? Because you've become so accustomed?
The weird thing with soccer is there's so many. So then you've got your EPL stream that you have to have. Then you have your FA Cup stream, which is ESPN.
But are some better than others to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Ironically, the Champions League, which is CBS, which is kind of Turner, has that. I think what they got was that same feel of what TNT has done with their pre and halftime show and all of that, towards like, hey, we're all here for a good time. We don't have to talk about statistics the entire time.
Right.
Which has made it a lot more fun, which I think, I mean, if you could take that essence, I'm not saying that I wouldn't want to see more of them, but I mean, they're all getting older. It's not going to last forever.
Right.
Like, you would like to see what someone else could do with that same format. Like, I hope they don't go to, I hope NBC doesn't get the NBA and then it's just like,
let's try to copy it.
Not just that, or it's just cookie cutter pre, post, halftime show of like, oh, this could be whatever.
Yeah. Well, I feel like people try to cop. I mean, it's a very successful show. And not that that's, I'm still watching the games, but that's turned into one of the pre, half, post game shows that I do enjoy and that I do watch. We talk a lot about, like, we were trying to make our perfect football booth last week. It's like, yeah, I mean, I will watch the pre games and the post games, but it's not, yeah, it just kind of, if it's on, it's on. I don't make it a point.
Like, they've done a great job of, if you see something stupid in the first half, you're like, oh, I can't wait to see what they're going to say about that.
They're going to make fun of this again. So they'll bring this back, and I got to watch the post. Yeah, I find myself enjoying the post game probably more than the pregame for TNT. But anyway, I feel like the network, it's got other stuff on there, but I don't know. What's on there now? Charmed? Probably for the 19th time.
Yeah, AEW wrestling.
Right. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. And, you know, I saw this post, and I know we've joked about it before, but, like, someone had just said, because, like, if truly,
you know, Apple TV's got stuff and Peacock and Amazon, you know, if more outlets end up with, you know, independent outlets like that end up with sports, someone said, yeah, we need to find a way to put all this stuff together. Oh, you mean like cable? Like we had? That's what cable was. I don't know. But if they all end up there, then I'll end up having to figure out a way to have them all.
I almost have a feeling it's going to become more niche to where we have all these viewing shows now. Like you've got the Manning cast as the big one on ESPN.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that, and I can't remember what it was. There was some, it was one of the Kings games. It was Kings, the play-in game with the
Warriors.
Kings and the, no, the
Pelicans.
Pelicans. And they have like a betting viewing thing.
Okay. That is that all? Yeah. So I, last night I saw it on the guide. I was watching the game and then I saw a few channels lower. So if it was TNT, it might have either been True TV or TBS, had also the Thunder and the Mavs game. But I don't know if it was a different cast or a betting one. I almost went to it, but I just left it on TNT.
Yeah, I think
I don't
it's
know
like
what
a
that
betting
is.
One.
Okay.
Like they talk about odds of what's going on. And
so it's other people hosting it.
Yes.
Got it.
But it's like a viewing mm-hmm. thing. Where to like they show the game, but they've got all of yeah. like the odds.
I remember, I think we were doing the midday show together the first time. What event would that have been? I feel like it was a college football national championship. I think it was the first time maybe ESPN put together like another view.
Oh, there was like three or four. I think,
they had
a
bunch that day, and it was the first time they did it. But I remember watching, like hearing all the different ones. I think they had.
It was like the home. It was like the college.
Yeah, it might have been Clemson's. I'm throwing teams together that may not have even been there. Clemson's, like the regular one.
Yeah.
A Clemson one, an Alabama one, and then there was like the House.
Yes.
And the House, I'm like, okay, at the time, I think it was like Michelle Beadle, Colin Cowherd, Bill Walton, Jalen Rose. I'm like, Jay Billis. I go, what is this mess? I go, I got to watch that. And then I watched it, and it was more enjoyable than I thought it would be. I'm like, why am I going to watch other people watching the game instead of the game, you know? But I found myself watching that for a little bit, and I go, well, that was the start of something. And Manning cast, I actually like Manning cast.
Yes. I think they do a good job of melting everything together to where you're getting insight from them of like, oh, I think they're going to do this. I think they're going to do that. But then also interviewing guests. Mm-hmm. I think they've got like I think that's what Monday Night Football originally was supposed to be like. Ironically, is what the Manning cast is now.
Yeah, and I think they do have the good mix. It's like TNT, like, you know, sometimes I'm there for the serious breakdown of what TNT does, but I'm also there for them making fun of themselves, and the Mannings do a good job of that. But then there's times where you're like, man, when they've got, I don't know, a Joe Burrow in there, and they're doing like a really good quarterback breakdown, and like before the play, they're like, oh, tight end up high on the release. I'm like, wait, what? Like, what are they seeing? Like, they all see it before the snap, and then, like, that's the throw. I'm like, okay, I've watched football forever. Like, what are they seeing? And then other times they're goofing on, hey, how about the time you – and they got funny videos and stuff, and they do a really good job. The A-Rod Michael K thing never took off. Neither did the Stephen A. Smith and whatever one he was doing for a while when the basketball and baseball trying to copy them, but – anyway, we'll see.
I want to see like Marshawn watching everything.
That would be interesting.
Like there should be something like, hey, Marshawn is going to watch something for an hour.
Right, and comment on it.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be good. They know how to get the true appeal there. So we'll see if that ends up being a big deal for TNT. Last night, TNT did have the first game on, and it was Boston beating up on Cleveland to take a 1-0 series lead. No real surprise there at all in that one. Maybe the surprise is how good Boston looked without Porzingis, because this team, my only flaw that I see with the Celtics that I have seen all year is the depth being a potential issue, but it's been none. I mean, it's been absolutely zero. And we're now watching a Knicks team that is losing more players and is just playing about seven guys a night. But they spread their minutes around. I mean, that's starting five of Brown, White, Holiday, Horford, and Tatum is incredible. And, you know, when you're looking at ways to make a team, I think I look at this like, okay, what are the Kings missing? We talked about Rudy Gobert earlier, and a lot of people on our YouTube chat were like, the Kings need someone like Rudy Gobert. Sure, that'd be great. There's not a lot of them, but is Rudy Gobert the answer? I look at Boston when, you know, they acquired a guy like Derek White. Seemed like it kind of went a bit under the radar. But to me, those are the kind of moves that every good team is able to make. Like, the Kings really have some good foundation pieces in Sabonis, Fox. I do believe Keegan Murray is going to be that guy that really continues to elevate his game. Again, we got to give him more time to make the full evaluation. We did this yesterday with a guy like Jalen Brunson, and who was, you know, several years in the league, was doing some things, but nothing that, you know, blew anybody away. And now he's one of the game's clutch great performers. So it took him some time. It takes people a different amount of time, needs opportunity. But you need to get more moves. Like, you know, the first year Kevin Huerter is here, that looked like an incredible move for the Kings. Getting Malik Monk felt like an incredible move for the Kings. So more things like that. Doesn't always have to be, hey, they got the defensive player of the year. They got this type of thing is exactly what they need. They need more talent that fits in a perfect way. So many times it's about fit as opposed to acquiring the most amount of talent. And I think if you look at Tatum, Horford, Holiday, White, Brown, and Porzingis, that top six with a guy like Pritchard, then the depth doesn't seem to be as much of an issue, because if you're playing, I don't know, Cornette with three of those other main guys, he's fine. And so Boston cruised, 40-point first quarter, never really looked back, won comfortably. They're tough to beat anywhere. And I know they're confident and certainly on a mission as they took game one, 120-95. We'll talk about the West a little bit later. When we come back, though, we've got three questions. We've got three answers. And it's all brought to you by, or it's all three for Madness, all coming your way when we come back right here on Sactown Sports.
Three questions, three answers. It's Three for Madness on the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross.
Here's question one.
All right, we got Three for Madness coming your way in just a moment from our text line at 916-339-1140. Also, you can hit us up on our YouTube page on Sactown Sports, watching the show. We were talking about TNT. Personalities make the shows. I don't watch much of ESPN coverage other than the game because it's just not entertaining to me. The TNT show is entertaining. If NBC was smart, they'd just bring over the whole inside crew. Yes, but I think it's already been stated publicly that Ernie Johnson would not go. Ernie is faithful to Turner. He's been there for like four decades, and they still have golf coverage, baseball stuff. He could still host. I know he'd miss basketball and those
AEW,
guys.
AEW, I'd like to see him get in the ring there.
In the ring?
Yeah, like interview the wrestlers.
Okay, yeah. Ernie's so good. Ernie's really good. It's funny, is a lot of people don't like his play-by-play. I would say I don't love it. I'm such a big fan of him. So it's his baseball play-by-play, I think it's fine. But his studio hosting, he's just the perfect leader, quarterback of that group. He just pushes the right buttons, reels them in when they need to, lets them go when they need to. He's a good listener. Ernie does a great job. All right, let's get to question number one.
Do you think Rudy Gobert deserved the Defensive Player of the Year award?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Chris, you wanted Victor Wembanyama to win one of his many that he's about to win, probably. It's the question I brought up earlier. Again, Minnesota's defense was great, but is that all Gobert? He's a huge part of it. I think their perimeter defenders are really good. Jaden McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander Walker, Conley is a savvy defender. Edwards is a good defender. But Gobert is their anchor, and, you know, he did a great job. They were the number one defense. They had a great record. He had good stats. I really don't have an issue with him being that. I guess my question, like I brought up earlier, is where's the love for the perimeter defenders? I still think there's as much importance, if not more sometimes, in being able to slow down a Steph Curry, a LeBron, a De'Aaron Fox, whoever it might be in this league that you're trying to limit their scoring capabilities. And it's not always done with blocking shots, changing shots, and rebounding. That's a huge part of it. But deflection, steals, limiting, bothering, hand-checking, staying out of foul trouble. Hey, James Harden averages 25. This player held him to 16. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander averages 30. Against this player, he only was getting 18. Well, that perimeter player is doing some serious work. So I just hope that's not forgotten. I don't know that I have a candidate that should have done that. So with all that being said, no real issue with Rudy Gobert. It's just trying to find his place, his legacy in this league. All right, question number two.
Question two.
Jamal Murray was fined $100,000 for throwing a water bottle on the floor. Does he get suspended if Denver is up 2-0?
Yeah, it was that in the heat pack. Like, he had a couple of different things that were going on in that game.
It's just so weird.
I'm stunned that he wasn't suspended. So, I don't think it was a matter of the series or the score. I think it's the only thing I could think of, Chris, honestly, is this is out of character and like a first-time violation. But you still go, I mean, look, I'm not here to defend a John Morant or Draymond Green like that have had multiple infractions and the second and third and fourth penalties have become worse. But I know Draymond suspended 100%. I was certain Jamal Murray would be suspended.
Strangely, when people are like, oh, he got off light, and I'm like, $100,000 for what he did. Like, if that was a regular season game, I think he gets suspended. I don't think that there's a fine. And I feel like almost like the – I'm not saying that this is what happened, but it almost feels like the league went up to him and said, hey, we're going to have to hit you with something. Do you want us to take a game away from you,
oh, yeah,
or do you want a huge fine?
Oh, give me the largest fine possible.
That's what it feels like it was.
Yeah, because, you know, and I'm this is where the league can also get in trouble a little bit, or at least the perception. It's like, if it's a suspension, it's a suspension. If it's a foul, it's a foul. Like, it's I would rather him be there. I think it gives them a better chance, but you still can't do that.
Yeah, because it feels like what we had last year with Draymond Green. Like, if he stomps Sabonis like that in the regular season,
yeah,
it's not one game. It's probably, like, two or three games.
Right.
And then people flipping out, like, oh, my God, how can you suspend him for that?
Yeah, and they're like, down 2-0.
If they're saying that in the regular season, they're probably like, yeah, he probably deserved it.
Yeah. Yeah, I really want to think that the league doesn't take series score into kind of the account. I don't think they should. But I was surprised. I mean, the fine doesn't surprise me. The lack of suspension. I really thought he would be suspended. I really did. So, a bit surprising to me. All right, question.
And I hate doing this, but, like, what if someone got hurt?
Right, and that's the thing. It's like, to me, a lot of times, the result of what happened is what the penalty becomes. Like, okay, so I'm almost guaranteeing Towns was the closest player there, and actually his own player, I think it was KCP, on that water pack or whatever, heat pack, whatever it was. But if Towns, like, rolled his ankle on the play, he's definitely suspended, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But you still threw it. So it's still the fact that you threw it. It's not because it shouldn't be because of the result. And it's a little bit like when we say, when a player's yelling at fans, oh, my gosh, that could have spilled the whole thing. Everybody in the arena could have been in jeopardy. Yes, but... oh, is it take everybody in the arena being in jeopardy for this? You know, it's like, why do we have to wait on the result? It's like, maybe it would be a larger one, but hey, if you threw it, you threw it. If he doesn't throw it, nobody gets hurt. None of this even happens. But I was really surprised that he didn't get suspended. All right, let's get to question three.
Question three.
The last 2-minute report came out yesterday and showed 4 blown calls and non-calls in the Pacers-Knicks game one. Jason, how does that make you feel? Better?
No. What's interesting is the one that I know got a lot of the first, like, publicized note on the last 2-minute report came from the quote-unquote screen, the illegal screen called on Miles Turner that resulted in Indiana having the last possession, seemingly the last possession, down by one, moving screen, DiVincenzo flops back or gets, you know, he gets screened. He gets hit pretty hard, but he flops back, gets an offensive foul that's challenged, looked at, and then ruled in favor of the way it was called on the floor. And the first thing that's publicly kind of stated was that screen was deemed legal by the NBA. Well, of course, because they reviewed it They called it, they reviewed it, and then they looked at it again. I mean, if that would have been the biggest crime, if you've called it, reviewed it, and said it's right, and then the last two-minute report says that's wrong, that's a huge issue. Now, the other calls, it goes back to what we've talked about many times before about the last two-minute report. I'm not a fan of it. I never will be a fan of it. I think a lot of people can't wait for it to come out to what? To show that one team got the wrong end of a call multiple times? Yes, that's what it did. Pacers were on the wrong end of that. I do not believe it's 8-5. I never will. I think if you start to get that road, I don't even know why you watch. I mean, I don't. I'm not. There are going to be nights where a team gets the wrong end of the whistle. That's just the way it's going to happen. It doesn't feel right, doesn't feel fair. But I really try to equate this in this way. We seemingly hold the referees to a standard that I think is unfair. I'm going to just say it that way. I want them to get every call right. I know that they won't. I think they do a good job. Some nights they have better nights, just like players. I got to believe, look, I think in anything you do, I've called NBA games before, and there's been nights where I left the arena going, I think I had a pretty good game tonight. And there's been nights like, ah, man, I was tongue-tied. I didn't say the things I wanted to say. I had all these other notes that I wanted to get in. I didn't feel as good as I could be better. It's just the way life works. I mean, and I have my own expectations. Probably listeners have their own expectations, viewers, fans of the referees. But we've all seen a bad call that we've seen think is terrible and dictates the outcome of the game. You know, why do players miss shots late? Why do players turn the ball over? We're all human. They make mistakes. And I don't know if that's like the take people want to hear, but I don't know any other way around it. I think this way too. We either should have way more replay or none. Like, I think this middle ground, like once you start to establish reviews, and that for the most part, the reviews help get the calls more in the correct realm. It's not perfect because unless you've got full, you know, proof to change the call, we've seen that situation where it's like, hey, it's called one way. Oh, man, I can't really tell even off a review. But if the point is for review to get calls right, then why wouldn't we have more of it? And if we say, hey, it's human, they're going to make mistakes, then just take it out. Or we have it the way we do. And you have the last two-minute report, and it's transparency, and it shows the league and the refs and their honesty and their mistakes. I know they make mistakes. I hope you guys realize that too. And I just don't think it's that beneficial. I don't see the benefit of it for the league. I really don't. So, Indiana fans, if this happens again in the series, look, we lived it here so closely and probably to this day are still not over 2002, and people go, oh, the Kings got screwed. That's the perception, that's the feel, and maybe that's the reality. You still don't think the Kings could have won that series, even with all of that? I know you do. I know you probably still think the Kings got screwed. I'm not saying you're wrong. I know when Doug Christie, when I worked with him here, I know he thinks they should have won that series, and I don't think he really puts that much, like if there's a pie chart of the blame as a player, you're putting that on yourselves. You're not putting that on your coaches. You're not putting that on the refs. You're putting that on yourselves. And so that doesn't make me feel any better that the last 2 minute report said that Indiana kind of got the raw end of that. I saw it. I thought they did too. Well, maybe they get the better whistle tonight. Maybe they get the wrong whistle again tonight. It's just kind of the way this thing works. Right or wrong. All right, last night, OKC didn't really need the benefit of the whistle. It's only game one. I still like Dallas in this series, though. My mind, I can't change. I'm not going to be that stubborn. But game one makes you believe that OKC is legit and real, and I think we should think that already. But they looked good, and we'll kind of go over what went right for them, what went wrong for Dallas. We'll do that when we come back here on Sacktown Sports.
With with the best in local sports.
They just make it interesting, you know?
It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross
on Sacktown Sports.
So inside our building, we've got, you know, kind of upstairs, downstairs. It's kind of a separation of the on-air crew and then everyone else. The others. Everyone else doing the hard work downstairs. But we have owner's rights up here, I would say. We like it when people come up. They'll come up here and use our bathrooms up here.
Yeah, come on.
You got a bathroom.
Use your
downstairs
bathrooms.
That's right. I don't go. I've gone in there. Yeah, maybe percentage of there. So there's two bathrooms upstairs, one larger, one downstairs. On the pie chart, I'm at like 98% upstairs, maybe 2% down, maybe 1% downstairs.
Yeah, I've probably. I'm up there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got our areas. They got a kitchen down there. We don't have that up here. But I saw in our like kind of a back area where, you know, some of our upstairs equivalent offices are, looks like there's a prepping for a Chris for Lott office.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised by that.
How does that make you feel?
Weird. I never thought I'd work in an office.
Are you going to decorate it?
Yes.
Oh, you've got plans?
I've had a friend say, like, okay, how big's the office?
It's a good size office.
And they're like, can something like 12 by 8 fit in there? And I'm like, what's the plan here?
What are they up to?
I have no idea.
Oh, it's a surprise?
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me who the friend is. Based on the friend, do you think, well, it sounds like a picture or something like that. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't even lead the thought. But are you comfortable enough with the friend to say, yes, I will put that in the office? No matter what, without knowing what it is.
Oh, I feel comfortable even if it should be uncomfortable.
You kind of want that.
It's the friend that has decorated our studio with the different pillows in sight.
Oh.
Where's that pillow?
Uh-oh. Did someone steal it?
I think it
might be like right here. Like no, like right in front.
It's not in the dog bed, is it? We'll find it. It might be in that box, which I think is also Dave's box. You know what that box is from, I think? I think that's from the egg stuff.
When was that? It was during the season.
Not the start of the season, because that was with you and me and Brendan. I don't know, a couple months ago. Have you used that?
I have.
Yeah, I have too. I used it last week a couple times. It's a great invention. We're going to get into the OKC and Dallas game from last night. A little more feedback from those of you out here. By the way, I still kind of have an office over there. Like I used to have one more so when I was doing more management type stuff. But like we could cut a little hole in the wall and like pass notes in between.
Yeah.
You know?
Or we should get the cup with the wire.
Yeah. Exactly. Of course. We'd just be stupid games. Why not? We were talking about the potential of TNT not having NBA basketball, and a lot of you have weighed in on that, and that show was not the show without Ernie. If they don't have a way to bring Ernie over, then the whole thing is over anyway. TNT owes it to Ernie to tell him he could do both if he wants to stay at TNT, and those games are the priority, but he could do NBC, NBA when available, kind of like Mark Jones does when he's with ESPN. Well, that's something that they have to agree upon. I will say this. The one thing I've definitely noticed in maybe the last five years, Chris, like I felt like it was taboo before to have, for example, you're watching the 49ers on Fox, and they may literally have a graphic that says, hey, NFL tonight, check out the Sunday night game on NBC, and it'll be the Rams and Seahawks. I'm like, wow, Fox is talking about a game on NBC or – Now it feels like people are. It's more about promoting the sport than the network. Because now they talk about networks all the time, and you know Jim Nantz might do the Masters, but he's also on ESPN before he ultimately the coverage shifts over to CBS. So there's much more sharing of talent and sharing of broadcast than there ever used to be that I can remember.
And going back with Ernie, I believe that Turner was just like, do whatever you would like to do.
Yeah, and he might just be like, yeah, I'm
because we saw that with Joe Buck.
Uh-huh.
When like Troy Aikman went to ESPN, it was basically like all right, we'll work something out so you could do what you want to do type of thing.
Yeah, and I was surprised Joe went to ESPN because of all his years of doing baseball. Like on Fox he had football and baseball.
And I mean, that's, to me, that's what, you know, what he grew up with, his dad calling Cardinals games and baseball games, and he did Cardinals. And now basically he's I don't want to say just football, but that's what he's doing. So
I want to see, there's talk about him doing golf at ESPN.
Yeah, probably. And he did some golf with Fox too. So, yeah. Yeah, I know when Tirico left ESPN to go to NBC when Al Michaels was still the primary guy, I thought, boy, that's a weird move. He's given up on like NBA basketball, some college tournament games, golf, all that stuff. He could get golf on NBC, but now he's at NBC. He got the Sunday night football package. He's going to be like the Olympic host.
Also did Notre Dame.
Yeah, so he...
Also, I mean, like, I'm sure they're having this conversation just like, hey...
Yeah, this we're going.
We're looking at NBA going forward, and
yeah,
you might be our guy.
Exactly. So that could all work out well for a guy like him to be at NBC already. All right, so let's say this about last night in OKC and Dallas. Just one game. I told you before the series I like Dallas. My caveat on this, though, and I'm not going to be, like I said earlier, so stubborn that, like, well, I picked Dallas, I'm going to stick with Dallas. I'm not going to change on one game. But what I might change on, Luka doesn't look right to me. And Luka tripped early in the game. And
you got sausage arms and cankles.
You know, when he fell, I don't know any other way to say this. Like, there are world-class athletes, and Luka is so good. But, Chris, the best way I could say it, he fell is like how I would fall present day.
Yes.
As someone... in advanced age.
Like, you see a lot of athletes, when they start to fall, they'll, like, roll with it.
Yeah,
or they'll,
smooth.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're funny and they do, like, a flip or, like, roll over. Like, whatever. And it's like he fell, like, again, like, if I tripped over this chair in the like, oh, and it's kind of funny. Like, you okay? I don't know. You know, like, there's a moment, like, and he fell and he looked. He's like, he just, but again, this is one of the best basketball players on the planet. But athletically... and physically, I don't know that he's right. And I don't know that he's, like, you know, completely inhibited from being great. It's just he doesn't look 100% to me. And if that's the case, it's going to be difficult for Dallas. But if he can get closer to that form, him and Kyrie, and they figure some things out, I think they're a really good rebounding team. I think that's an area where they could do some damage on OKC, though they didn't last night. Something to watch. But OKC has been awesome. They've been on a roll. And they're continuing this thing in a positive direction right now. And I think it'll clearly be a fun series. And, you know, as Kings supporters, Kings fans out there listening, I've kind of asked this question as the playoffs gone on. I feel, I'll speak for myself, like of the four teams that are left, Denver, Dallas, OKC, Minnesota, I really, truly don't have a preference. I don't. I will say this, I'm still mad at Dallas. I'm mad at Luka for falling on Malik and kind of hurting his season and in some sense, the end of the Kings season. I feel like I would accept it the easiest if Denver got back again. I know they're down 0-2 and they're in trouble going to Minnesota, but that doesn't feel like that anybody truly in definition passed the Kings. I know you can go, well, OKC has already done it. Minnesota has already done it. Dallas has done it. They did it this year. Now, does that mean they stay there? Maybe. Does that mean this was 1 year wonder? Maybe. We've got to see how it goes. Because that was the example I gave the other day about, especially if it's OKC versus Minnesota, we will then have 8 different Western Conference teams make the conference finals in 4 years. And we will have our 12th team make the Western Conference Finals in 11 seasons. So that's all while in that run we had a dynasty of the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors, in their 5 years in a row of making the Conference Finals, faced 4 different teams. So they faced Houston twice, but you had different teams in there. And so along that run, my point here is, oh man, is any of these teams like Minnesota, Dallas, Denver, and maybe some feel Denver, and or OKC, are they becoming the next Warriors? Are they that Houston team that pops in once? Are they the Portland team that popped into a conference final? Are they a Phoenix team that popped into a conference final? It doesn't all work that way. Like when somebody
finals for the Phoenix Suns,
and they made it all the way to the finals, and then haven't been back to the conference finals since. So, you know, the Lakers have been there. Like, is it a one and done, or is it something here to stay? And yes, they're young, makes you believe that they're here to stay, but that's not how the league works. It's just not. Memphis was young last year. They were the 2 seed. Every reason to believe, hey, a better year will be the 1 seed. Well, reasons, obviously, with John Morant, Steven Adams, different things that happen, injuries, boom, their season's derailed. The Kings, they were a young team. They were 3 seed. Well, they should be better than that. They didn't make the playoffs. Ah, the Warriors, though, all that experience. They get another run at it. Those young guys will help them. They didn't make the playoffs. Lakers, conference finals a year ago. Good offseason additions. And you still have LeBron and AD out in round one. You know, we're looking at the Rockets coming up and the Spurs coming up. All those things look promising. Minnesota was not talked about as being a team that could get this far before the year. OKC certainly wasn't going to be the 1 seed. Things aren't promised. Things aren't guaranteed. You've got to enjoy the season you have and make the most of what you have. And when you're these 4 that are here, even Denver down 0-2, you still have an opportunity. Dallas down 0-1, still have an opportunity. OKC and Minnesota ahead in their series. Young teams with an opportunity. Got to strike while you can. And it's been fun. It's been fun to see some fresh blood in there. And we'll see how that goes. All right, speaking of fresh blood, we're going to get an opportunity to see some new players picked coming up in the NBA draft. The lottery is coming up this weekend. We'll talk a little bit about that with the Kings odds and what we can expect. We got that and more on the NBA as we continue here on Sacktown Sports.
The only place in the morning to get your sports fix.
Live and local.
The Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross.
You know, there's some interesting thoughts coming in on the YouTube chat line, certainly on our text line, 916-339-1140 on YouTube. We appreciate you guys all out there checking in with us, text line as well. Where was the one I wanted to bring up here? Okay, we're talking about Minnesota. Yeah, I agree. Knowing that Mini and OKC are going to be a problem for years is depressing as a Kings fan. Here's the one. The Mavs and OKC game showed how far the Kings executive team has let the team fall. Kings are far behind. That's one I would like to dig down on and dig. I guess I know why you're saying that, because the Kings are home, didn't make the playoffs, and here are the Mavs, and here are OKC in round two. My question is, and that's a perfect example. So, last year, at this very time, Kings had just been eliminated by the Golden State Warriors. But everybody was kind of excited because it was kind of the first time through, right? Playoffs, we all had hopes of, that next year will be better, naturally. That's the thought process. You finish as a 3 seed. Imagine a full year of all this. Kings decide to run it back, and to pick that apart is more than fine to say they probably should have changed some things. I understand that. That's not really my point. My argument would be, at this time a year ago, as a Kings fan, one, you're upset that the Kings lost, but you're feeling very upbeat about what just happened and where they're going. And so now you're a year removed, and they missed the playoffs, so you're upset about that. But are they still not going in the right direction? And to this same point where today, present day, OKC and Dallas should feel great. But at this time a year ago, OKC wasn't a playoff team. Dallas was one of the disappointments. They were 5 seed. Going into the trade deadline and added Kyrie Irving and then fell out of the top 10. So now they made moves, and those moves helped them. OKC, I would say, didn't really make a lot of moves. It just got Chet Holmgren healthy and then continued to have the young players develop. So there isn't one exact path for everybody. I think the one thing we would all universally say is the Kings have some good building blocks, but they need more. And what is the exact more? we've had people say they need a player like a defender and rim protector like Rudy Gobert. Certainly that would be nice. I personally think they need more perimeter help. Rim protector would be okay. I'm torn on the belief of Domantas Sabonis. Like some say, they can't win enough with him being their center. I think he's a pretty special center. There's some limitations. I think he's got to figure out a few more things to his game, maybe truly become more of a stretch five and hit some threes consistently, along with all that great rebounding, passing, and playmaking. Or do you really try to play another big with him and put him at the four or maybe five offensively, four defense? I don't know, but like when you play a Valanciunas, who seemed to have bothered him, a Zubats, Embiid, I mean, now I'm taking some of the big guns, you know, Jokic. I'd referenced, you know, make a trade for the team. Like, could there be a way to get a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr., kind of that Rudy Gobert rim protector? Not a great rebounder, but Sabonis is. Can shoot the three, so he'll spread the floor. But could take some pressure off you and him defensively. More playmakers, more shooting. There's several areas this team needs to address, and I'm sure they will. But that's where the inexact science of scouting, of making personnel moves. We had a very candid quote yesterday from Daryl Morey of the Philadelphia 76ers, who basically said, yeah, I was wrong on how Buddy Hield would fit here. I appreciate his honesty. Obviously, I'm looking at that going, yeah, Buddy Hield on Philly. I would look at that and go, that makes some sense. Joel Embiid as a serious interior and, you know, outside threat, but someone that demands a double team, triple coverage sometimes, and is going to, with good ball movement, lead some open shooters. Buddy is a gifted shooter. Tyrese Maxey can create a double team. All right. Tobias Harris at times, if he's cooking. Buddy Hield on that team, to me, made some sense. Now you get the result, and you, doesn't really make some sense. What the Kings elected to do in the offseason, I really think you can argue on the positive side for it. There's easy ways to argue on the negative side. You just were the three seed. You had Fox and Sabonis had great seasons. Herter was really good in year one. Keegan, it was year one, but you're waiting to see what he can turn into year two, expecting a jump, which there was. And Harrison Barnes was kind of the one decision they had to make, and they elected to bring him back. Okay. You still have Monk. There was excitement about Sasha. And I thought adding JaVale McGee, all that seemed to make sense. Then you get into the year, and Sasha had injuries and certainly wasn't the player that we all expected. JaVale McGee, for the lack of a better term, was a non-factor. And then Herter and Barnes didn't have the same kind of years that they had the year before. All that combined with Fox having as good, if not better, Sabonis having a better year, Keegan having a better year, Malik Monk having a better year, but it wasn't enough. So what's next? What do you do now? How do you get this better? Well, one way of many is what? Free agency. So Malik Monk certainly will be key piece number one if the Kings can acquire and keep him. Another way is through trades, and that, you know, is the big unknown at this point. And the third way, well, the other third way would be player development. I think we're seeing some of that. Some of the guys that they currently have certainly have to get better. And I think we'll see some of that. I don't think we should expect that Fox and Sabonis have hit their peak and they won't have better seasons. They could still be great. But I really think there's still another jump or two to have for Keegan Murray. And the last way is through the draft and the lottery. It's not an end-all be-all. You look at some of the teams that are in the lottery, again, at the top. Expected to be at the top. Detroit, Washington, Charlotte, Portland, San Antonio. They've all been there for a few years. It's sometimes the thought is, hey, get to the lottery, bounce right back, get out of there. Sometimes. But Kings fans, you know, Kings spent many years in the draft lottery, and part of their mistakes back then was drafting incorrectly. So Sunday is going to be the draft lottery, and the Kings are going into that in the 13th position. Odds of moving up aren't very good. I'm going to assume they won't. Hope for the best. But what I always say is if they're drafting first, 7th, 23rd, only in the second round. Draft well. And whatever that means. Not the player you think you want or that, you know, just they need to get it right. And I think they've done a pretty good job with this group. It's never perfect. Nobody is at this. We've discussed this. We did the Jalen Brunson example of going in the second round, kind of talked about as a solid rotational player, to now maybe the guy having the best postseason of anybody this year. But at 13, even in what is deemed a weak draft, you can get somebody good. And a year where you don't expect to be a lottery team, it's not the high end of the lottery, not allegedly a great draft, but to have a player under team control for a couple of years, you got to find, you know, hey, look, it's not a positive not making the playoffs, but if this is an offshoot of it that can help keep this window going. And like, again, I don't think the Kings are on a limited window at this point. I feel like you've got Sabonis and Fox signed and Keegan Murray. That core can be good for a couple of years here. It's not only tweaks around the edges, but maybe even a significant one in the middle of the core of that that the Kings have to do. And whether it's this offseason, during the regular season next year, but it needs to happen relatively soon for this team to kind of get out of the spot they're in at the moment. And I think this year showed what the West will likely be like over the next year or two. And what I want to say is unpredictable. For those that are riding off the older teams like the Suns, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Warriors, I'd say be careful there. And those anointing the Thunder, T-Wolves, you know, some of these young, soon-to-be Rockets, Spurs as, okay, they're just going to overtake everybody. Be careful there too. This year showed you have a great year, you could do some damage in the West. And I think a lot of teams are capable of that, Kings included. If things fell right, we know it. Look, watching these teams that are here at the end, I mean, we're raving about like teams like Denver and Minnesota. Kings went, what, 5-2 against those teams during the regular season? And yeah, regular season may be different, but that's still impressive. 2-2 against the Thunder. Got a win against the 2-2 against the Mavs. Those are the four that are left. It feels like they're far away. They may not be as far away as you think. But that also just doesn't mean, hey, they got this figured out. Just get there again next year and take another run at this. There's got to be some tweaks and some things to make sure they feel they're in a better position. All right, 2 hours complete. We got more to get to in the next hour. Some NBA news and notes, including more awards being announced today. The NBA MVP announced today. We'll discuss that and more straight ahead here on Sacktown Sports.